With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A few nights to tell you about. Didi Haman, Robbie Fowler and myself are going to be in Ireland in the next few months on a tour, five times tour. Wexford, 1st of October. Dublin, 2nd of October. Cork, 29th of October. Galway, 30th of October. Then we're into Derry on the 3rd of December. And then down to Limerick on the 21st of January. And then back up to Belfast on the 22nd of January. So right over the Christmas and the New Year period. Obviously go on to the fivetimes.co.uk/Ireland on the website, and that'll tell you all the details that you need to know. Jamie Carragher is in Bristol next Friday, the 14th of August. That's almost sold out, so get your tickets if you haven't got them. Like I said, that's almost sold out, so you've got to be quick on that. Luis Garcia is in London on the 11th of September. If you want to go and see him there, again, on the website, fivetimes.co.uk. for all that information. And plus, we've got our annual golf day at Cardon Park, and that's on Thursday, September the 24th. So if you've got any corporates, any teams, anyone from work, you want to get together and have a good day out, a lot of the lads are playing in that. I think we've got about 16 other lads signed up already who are going to come and play on the golf day. And obviously, first come, first serve on who you would like to play in your team. We're also working on coming to as many cities across the UK as possible with as many of the legends. So if you've got any ideas of who you'd like to see, obviously get in touch via the website, drop them a line, an email, and Robin will pick it up and have a look. Even going back to the lads from the 60s who are still around and still able to travel and stuff, you know, Ian Callum, you want to listen to him, just drop Robin a line and we'll see if we can sort that out. So keep an eye on it. Like I said, fivetimes.co.uk. For all the details. Okay, welcome back. We're on the, not so much the eve, but we're looking forward to the season opening at the weekend. Some big games. Everyone's been looking forward to the Premier League starting again. We've started again with the Five Times podcast, the first one of the season of many, we hope. Myself and Jan will be obviously getting together just to open it up and get a feel for things. Jan, have you had a good summer?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I mean, I think it's always when the season comes to an end, you kind of need the break. And then a couple of weeks in, you can't wait for the new season to start. And it's been exciting to a certain extent. I think a lot of questions you had when we finished last season, I still think they're unanswered in a way, although we have spent a lot of money. And the season, I don't know, I think the season could go, You know, either way, it could be a great success with the players that we bought, or they might need a bit of time to settle in.
Just before we really get into the thick of it, do you watch everything that's going on through the summer, or do you actually have a real break off? Because obviously you work in the media, you're all over the place all year into different countries, obviously with the Champions League and doing the league games and keeping an eye on Liverpool. Do you totally switch off, or do you watch intently what's going on?
No, I switch off, which is probably the wrong thing to do, isn't it? Because then there's a lot of catching up to do, but that's what I
do.
Have
to be fair.
Yeah, but I went to the under 21 championship in the Czech Republic, which I really enjoyed. It was a sort of a low key event, and then a couple of holidays where I haven't picked up a paper. So, but we're back now, aren't we? So it's time to catch up.
Right, let's get stuck into it. Obviously, you just mentioned that there's a few changes at Liverpool, and you know. Myself, I'm quietly excited. It was a bit of a different market to the one that opened up last year, where we were full of, you know, expectation about players coming in because of the fantastic season that we just had, finishing second. And you know, we all expected, although Luis Suarez was gone and it was the big talking point last season, we were all expecting another big striker to come in. It didn't really materialise, and the squad was sort of thickened, wasn't it, with different players and different ages and stuff. And but this season the market feels to have a different, it feels like there's been a different approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost saying that you felt that 12 months ago we bought for the sake of buying.
No, I'm saying...
Yeah, but we had a lot of money, didn't we?
Yeah, but I understand why he bought in numbers.
Yeah, but we decided, when we had 16 million left, then we decided to buy Balotelli, which we probably didn't give a lot of thought to, did we? So, yeah, this year, I think we've tried to address some of the problems. I would have still loved to have bought a centre-half, but apart from that, Firmino... I've no idea how he's going to settle into to the Premier League, but of course he is an exciting player. I like Benteke. Benteke's best is more than good enough.
Would you say though the difference? I'm trying to say the difference in the markets from last year and what we bought and this year. You would say everyone. What have we bought? 7, maybe 8 players. You're probably looking at 5, 6 players going straight into the first team, where last season I'm saying, you know, we bought in numbers where we knew they were the squad, you know, there were more squad players bought last season rather than players to go straight into the team.
Yeah, but I mean 12 months ago we bought players but we had what we felt was already a settled team and that's not the case anymore. So yeah, Klein and Milner, Benteke, Firmino, they're certainly all going to come straight in. And then there's a couple of interesting ones. Gomez has made a real impression pre-season. Danny Ings is interesting, although I have to say, during the under-21 championship, he did not impress me. But nevertheless, he has scored 11 goals in a team that got relegated to Burnley, so I would add him in that category of he could certainly go either way. He could be a success, or he could be somebody who could struggle to make that step up.
You just mentioned young Gomez there. I've worked a lot of the games through the summer for Liverpool TV and doing a lot of analysing on what's happened and the way they played. And obviously he's coming to the team at left-back, more probably known as a right-back or centre-half even when he was at Charlton. But he's done a job on the left there. I really didn't expect to see what I've seen. I thought he had bags of pace. I thought for such a young lad, he kind of had old head on young shoulders and... He took responsibility really, really well. His physique really shocked me. I think he looked ready to go into the first team, or certainly looked ready enough to cope with the demands of the Premier League and a game week in, week out. Could you see him slotting in at that left-back position, or would you like to see him sort of bide his time and wait maybe to get back into a position he prefers?
I think if you're ready, you're ready. There's always a danger, isn't it, that you sort of get to play out of position, which you can do for a while, or maybe even for the season, but eventually it will catch up with you. But on the other hand, and when you mentioned before, you know, play right-back, centre-half, left-back, the one player that instantly springs to mind is Steve Nicol, isn't it? Mm. You know, I can play anywhere, and I can play well anywhere, so maybe he falls into that.
Did I not spring to mind there, because, you know...
You could play anywhere, but...
Versatile.
Well. Yeah, but you couldn't play well.
Oh, right.
You only played well when you played right wing-back, and you put in those crosses. I mean, I don't know if the listeners will remember, but
I'm still doing them now. I'm still doing
2 months ago, and you stole the show at the Bernabeu, you know.
I know.
Against that 62-year-old left.
I don't like talking about it.
You shouldn't either, but I'm talking about it.
Okay.
But Gomez falls into the category of well-scouted boys, you know, because anyone could have took him, couldn't they, for the fee. I mean, he could have gone to Bournemouth if they'd have got there before Liverpool, yeah. Because he was accessible to everybody. So that's good scouting. They found somebody with a real future, you know. So I'm excited about it.
We've just sort of touched on, we'll go back onto it about the signings coming in and maybe our formation's going to set up, because that is a big talking point. But one thing that has probably dominated the papers right through the summer until it actually happened was and we've got to talk about the Raheem Sterling deal. It was always going to happen, you felt. It was just when and how much. Did it surprise you, the fee? I actually thought it was daylight robbery, to be fair. Whoever done that deal for Liverpool had a mask on. But well played.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But for both clubs, it was the same, wasn't it? Liverpool sold potential and Manchester City bought potential, you know, and for that they had to pay. He is not currently a...
Is that where we're at now, 49 million for potential?
Well, I think so, yeah. And English potential, that's what it costs.
Why English, Sean? What's this big...
Because you have to have so many homegrown players. I mean, if you look at Manchester City, Manchester City to me looks like a club who's waiting for their new manager. They've invested in English players because you have to have a quota of homegrown players. So Sterling... they bought the boy from Aston Villa, Fabian Delph. They went to Fulham and spent 12 million on a youngster. All English players because they need a quota. But they haven't gone and bought apart from that. So I think they're waiting for Pep Guardiola to either run into a bit of trouble during the season or see his contract out. So what I was going to say before is that Raheem Sterling currently is not a £49 million player. In 2 years' time, that might have changed. But at the moment, they have more than paid for what they've got.
Do you see him fulfilling his potential?
What is his potential? I mean, for a 49-year-old, £49 million player...
I was going to say, a 49-year-old, there's no chance I'd spend that much money on him. How old are you? Mind you, you must be 40, late 40s.
Maybe even 52, Jason.
I would spend a few million on you. Not 49 million, but...
No.
40.
But I still think he's got a lot of things to work on, Raheem Sterling. I think technically, in a lot of aspects, he's poor. But of course, he has this incredible ability, doesn't he? To run at pace with the ball as if it's stuck onto his foot, you know, where you can't get anywhere near him. So he has got ability. Will he fulfil what? I mean, the expectations are big at Manchester City. For it to be a good season, you have to win the league. Will he be the missing link compared to them last year? I doubt it very much.
And obviously a player who, Raheem Sterling, leaving the football club and has probably stepped into them shoes and probably grabbed it with two hands, because I think he's had a very good pre-season, was Jordan Ibe. Do you see him as a better player? Do you think they've maybe bought the wrong player?
I think sometimes with young players, you got to be careful. I think we got to be careful in shouting off the rooftops that we got the next one in Jordan Ibe. Jordan Ibe is an exciting player. He's definitely got a man's head on his young shoulders, hasn't he? But the next thing he needs to do in his game is have more impact on the things that win your games, creating and scoring.
Did Raheem Sterling have that?
He did in the Suarez season.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anyone.
But then there was a lot of players who had
exactly.
impact.
A lot of players were dragged up by Suarez.
Yeah.
So last year, Sterling, we would all admit that it was a disappointing season.
Yeah, but people then would, I mean, from his, you know, for his side, people would say he was moved positions, he played centre forward, he did a job for the team, really. They're actually nailing down a right-sided position and play there all season and get some consistency. You know, in his argument, he will say, well, I was moved all over the place. But even then, when he played centre-forward, he got himself in good positions and squandered chances.
What was it before?
Yeah.
Technically poor
in
certain areas. I've often come away from Anfield where people would go, oh, he was unlucky.
Yeah.
That you do a disservice to people like Roger Hunt, Ian Rush, John Aldridge, Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen, who scored. It is nothing to do with luck.
Yeah.
So when you miss an open goal,
job,
when you miss an open goal, you're not unlucky. When you hit the post, you're not unlucky. Scoring goals is a skill, and he doesn't have that in his back at the moment.
Okay, well, I just want to touch on the way it was all handled. Do you think the club handled it really, really well? They kept their mouth shut, didn't they? Nothing seemed to come out of Anfield about the deal until it was actually done. Probably there was a few lessons learned on past deals, wasn't there, the way it was handled. But Raheem, you know, a 20-year-old playing in Liverpool's first team on a lot of money at the time, you know, he's not going to wake up, is he, and think, I want to go Manchester City, I want £200,000 a week, blah, blah, blah. Do you think his agent had a big pull in that, you know, missing the first couple of days of training? Do you think the FA needs to take a look at the way situations like this are played out, and maybe the agent needs to be looked at?
I don't think in terms of that and relationships between players and clubs and managers and agents or whatever, I think it's gone too far. You know, I think it's a loose train. You just can't control it. And you just got to accept that's the way it is.
Is that what you've got to do?
I think there's so many things in football now where you go, in an ideal world, but this is not an ideal world, and you just got to let it roll. Raheem Sterling, and I've said this before, who are we to judge whether Liverpool is the right club for Raheem Sterling or not? Only he can do that. I'm convinced, though, however, that he would have liked to have handled the whole situation in a different way. He does not come out of this very well, although I think he'll lose very little sleep over that.
The agent?
Both of them. I think both of them will wake up this morning, they'll lock into their Barclays bank account and they'll go, do you know what? I can live with the abuse I'm going to get at Anfield.
Well, something else has changed, and two other people that have left the football club, not in playing roles, but obviously in
backroom staff
roles, was Mike Marsh and Colin Pascoe. Two new faces have come in, Gary McAllister, Sean O'Driscoll. What was your take when that happened?
I have to be honest, I was surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Mainly because Colin Pascoe has been Brendan's man ever since Brendan went to Swansea. Brendan then had a choice whether he wanted to take him to Liverpool or not. Mm. He's chosen to take him. That kind of tells you that he's got confidence in him, yeah?
And trust, which is a big thing, isn't it?
He's then himself promoted Mike Mars from the academy to work with the first team. So they are 100% his choices. I also believe that it was 100% his choice to get rid of them. And I also believe that it was 100% his choice who he wanted to replace them. Now, Sean O'Driscoll is a very, very good coach.
Before you go into Sean and Gary McAllister, why you're saying you're confident that it was Brendan's choice to get rid of him? Why would you want to get rid of him?
Well, you can only want to get rid of them if you don't feel that they are what you want. And what you want from your assistant, your first team coach, might have changed from, say, 18 months ago. He might have arrived. When Brendan Rodgers took over at Liverpool, and you look at the defensive side of our game, he's thinking, yeah, but I've got Carragher. So Carragher will do a lot of his coaching without doing any coaching. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Gerrard's gone, Carragher's gone, Suarez has gone. Don't forget, Suarez, just through the way he played, took care of a lot of organisation within the way that we played. So
and dictated a lot in the sense of how they played
exactly
as well,
that's
didn't
what I'm
he?
Saying, yeah. And I think Brendan realised that, and he went, listen, I'm just going to let him get on with it.
It's like winding them up and sending them out,
yeah,
and they're going to do it.
We'll just all follow suit, yeah? So maybe he's realised I need something different from the people that I work with. So hence the reason he decided. I think it was a big and a brave move because he has to a certain extent left him exposed because you can only have so many lives, can't you?
Yeah.
You can only...
Unless you're a cat.
Unless you're a cat, you have nine. But you can only have so many lives. So he's now left exposed in terms of that. This is sort of his final roll of the dice, isn't it?
And then you were going to touch on Sean O'Driscoll and Gary
Mack. Sean O'Driscoll is a good coach, but I believe that every Premier League club have good coaches. 25 years ago, or 20 years ago, Jason, even when you played, if there was a good coach at a football club, it would be quite a big thing, wouldn't it? You came to Liverpool, we didn't do a lot of coaching.
No.
So when you came across a good coach, it was quite a big thing, wasn't it? And everybody in football would go, I tell you what, like Brian Kidd of Manchester United.
Well, he was my first one. I actually went, what a good coach he is.
So, yeah.
And that's no disrespect to Ronnie Moran.
But
you didn't get coached at Liverpool.
Exactly.
You didn't have to be
so
honest.
So what I'm saying is, what is a good coach? Because I believe every Premier League club has good coaches. So what do you need? You actually need somebody. To be a good coach, you don't need to be put on good sessions that blows the minds of the players. You need to be able to improve players, don't you? So you need to be able to look and go, Jason McAteer's playing right wing back. This is his weakness, and I can improve his weakness. And that's what a good coach is these days, I think. Sean O'Driscoll might be that man. Gary McAllister, I have to say, Gary McAllister is one of these guys, isn't it? That I don't think there's anyone in the whole world who dislikes Gary McAllister. You know, he's a great lad. He was a great, great player. I mean, he's the only player I've ever double nutmegged, which is some achievement, isn't it? Gary remembers that.
So do I.
But it was a strange choice. It was a strange choice. Gary's been out of football for a number of years. You never got the impression that he was looking to get in at that level. He was working with BT Sport doing a bit of...
Yeah, I was with him through the beginning of the year, and it was never suggested that's what he was going to do.
Yeah. But of course, it's... Whether it's a good appointment or not, only time will tell.
What is his job?
Well, he's obviously first-team coach, isn't he? And, you know, what a first-team coach does, he will probably work with a lot of the players that don't play regularly. And then everything else he'll do is what the manager wants him to do. At the moment, it's a good appointment because the fans are quite excited, and I think the players like him. In 6 months' time, we'll reassess. And
there's also that link as well, isn't it? Like Liverpool have always had with an ex-player.
Yeah.
With the club, we see it with Sammy Lee, Phil Thompson,
absolutely.
Mike Marsh.
There's nothing wrong with that. Liverpool is one of those clubs, isn't it? You know, you've got to be careful you don't rip the heart out of it. And you know, in the last couple of years, we've had Carragher and Gerrard leave the club, isn't it? So
yeah.
We're a little bit short on the bond between the fans and the players.
And obviously that position, when it come up and it was got widely spoke about, it was going to be an ex-player going in. I mean, Robbie Fowler's name instantly come to my mind. He would suit that. And you said Gary McAllister was a bit of a surprise. Did you have anyone else? Who would you have thought had gone in and gone, yeah, I get that?
Well, the reason I'm surprised with Gary McAllister, because Gary McAllister was a manager
yeah.
a number of years ago. And on the face of it, he did okay. We don't know what went on behind closed doors, but on the face of it, he did
done all right. Yeah. But Sean O'Driscoll was a manager as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that? Gone from being a manager to a coach?
No.
You've always stayed a manager.
Yeah. And then, of course,
that must be difficult.
Yeah, it must be very, very difficult.
And the like you said, they've both been managers.
Very, very difficult. But of course, it is one of those opportunities, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gary McAllister, Sean O'Driscoll were never going to be managers. They were never going to be managers of Liverpool, were they?
Yeah.
So their only hope was always to come in on the backroom staff. But it's a brave move by Brendan. And like the signings he's...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, we hope all these things work out.
So the signings he's made, probably 7 or 8. Obviously, they've gone through pre-season. And I've got to say, you know, from the very beginning of pre-season, he's gone strong with his teams. He's obviously wanted to integrate the players straight away, strike up a relationship and, you know, get an understanding between them all. They've all played a lot of game time together. When I say they've all played, probably you're looking at his team have all played a lot of game time together. Benteke's come in now, the last of the piece of the jigsaw that they're kind of making out. A player that they've wanted for a while. Does that change the dynamics? Obviously, he's a player he's going to play week in, week out. Does that change the dynamics of the way Liverpool were going to play? Because they were going very central last season, everything going down the middle, Coutinho and Henderson running off him, and Lallana all playing around that middle area. And very rarely did we go wide. Obviously, now, with Benteke becoming a central striker and a big, imposing threat and a player that doesn't really run the channels, you're looking at crosses coming in from wide areas as... That changed the dynamics of the way we're playing? Is it a different way?
It has to. To get the best out of Benteke, you have to play to his strengths. And Tim Sherwood, who did that very well when he went to Aston Villa, and Liverpool's got
it. What does that mean then?
Well, I believe that Benteke, first and foremost, got to be served early. And I don't mean channels, yes. You rightly said he does not run the channels. Yeah, that's not his game. But Benteke would always remind me of a Mourinho-type centre-forward.
The drug was...
What Chelsea have got, they've got the best server of all the centre-halves in the Premier League in John Terry. And they got Fabregas, people who can pass the ball forward to Diego Costa very, very early.
Yeah.
And that's what Liverpool need to do. And that's the only worry I have. It's all very good. You've got to be able to serve a minute, but who do we have? Who do we have that plays that pass into Benteke early before the opposition gets set? You look at our centre-halves, you look at our centre-midfield. I mean, our centre-midfield players are very mobile, aren't they? Work very, very hard, up and down. But do we have somebody who will take that responsibility and go, here you are, Christian, here you are. You know, get on with that, get on with that. I don't know. Because the one thing he doesn't want to be crowded, does he? You know, he wants that ball early. He can get his feet sorted out, lay it off, and be part of the play again.
Going back to the going wide and getting balls in the box, I think one thing that was apparent watching the pre-season games was the pace that Klein and Gomez offered down the flanks and the amount of ball that they got. So I was actually thinking, watching it, they have changed their way of playing and stuff. How do you see them setting up? He's a big fan of 4-3-3. The big talk is the diamond as well in the middle of the park with two up front. Will he chop and change that for you, for the opposition, and whether he's home or away?
I would like to think that Brendan would have learned an awful lot from last season. Last season, he sort of lost focus a little bit. He didn't quite know how he wanted to play. And there was too many personnel changes.
Felt that was before and the end.
Yeah.
Because then he found the formula with the three at the back, five midfield.
It was never, the three at the back worked well.
He never wanted it, though, did he?
No. It worked well in terms of the results got better.
Yeah.
But I'm never convinced that we played particularly better than we've done. So he was never convinced. We know that Brendan is very pure and he wants to play this on the eye, very beautiful football. So I think he'll play 4-3-3 when Sturridge comes back. I do think he'll try and revert to a diamond in midfield and two up front. But of course, it all depends on these first seven away games, doesn't it? First seven away games, they kind of decide your season.
Let's just go back to what you just said there, the formation, how they line up. How do they line up, everyone being fit? So how do they line up?
I think he's quite prepared to give players more time than what he did last year. I think in certain situations last year he was very, very quick to change things. So I think it's Lovren's time, yeah? He spent big money on Lovren. Lovren's now going to come in and play alongside Skrtel, yeah? And give him a run. I think he's going to start with Gomez. I know it's not an ideal game. Stoke, very difficult. But I think he's going to start with Gomez, give him a run of games. And then off.
On the left?
On the left.
Klein on the right.
Klein on the right, yeah. That's our feeling. I'd be amazed if it wasn't Mignolet in goal.
I would be, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got your midfield with Henderson, with Milner. Joe Allen is now out injured. Lucas is in there, possibly.
Who's not played a lot of game time.
No. Be interesting to see what he does, but I think just think with it being Stoke, maybe Lucas will get the call. And then, of course, Ivan, Coutinho and Benteke up front. And
so it's a 4-3-3 for you?
For me, it will be, yeah.
A 4-3-3. I was just trying to think of it myself there. I'd go with a 4-3-3, Benteke being central. I went over to Helsinki at the weekend and watched them, and I felt that the first 60 minutes, that was the team that was going to play, apart from Ings, who will come out of the team for Benteke, and they set up with, you're right, Lovren and Skrtel playing centre-half, Mignolet in goal, Klein and Gomez, and then it was Milner, Henderson, Ibe, Ings, Lallana, Coutinho. Have I got enough players in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it was going to start. So Lallana for me. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the team he's going to go with. Benteke coming in for Ings.
Well, I mean, Lucas might not play. I just think that if you want to play three centre midfield players, you've got to have a number six. But if you're going to play with a number six, have somebody who thinks like a number six.
Right, okay.
Lucas thinks like a number six, doesn't he? You're going to play Henderson or Milner in that role. They're not going to think like a number six, are they? So you might as well. And would it be such a difficult away game as well? I think we've got to be careful we don't go too gung ho. We don't have to win 5-0 to prove.
Yeah.
What happened on the last day of last season?
1-0.
Yeah, 1-0 will do, won't it? You know?
What worries you then about this season? I mean, I think going forward, for me, we've got plenty of options. We can change it. We've got different kinds of strikers now. He's got width and pace, and he's got creativity in there, Coutinho. He's got experience in there now, all going forward. What worries me, watching the Helsinki game, was the two centre-halves, to be honest.
They worried you?
They worried me, yeah. I felt Lovren got pulled out of position a couple of times. I think, just listening to what you were saying there, and distribution. I thought Skrtel is a great defender, but when he's got the ball and time at his feet, his distribution is not great. I'd have to say Lovren as well, his distribution was poor. He was on the left side of Skrtel, struggled a little bit, got pulled out of position. With Gomez going forward, you know, he had to come into that channel. He got pulled into places he didn't want to be, and didn't really cope with it, really. And they caused problems, Helsinki. I've got to admit, they caused Liverpool problems in the first 20 minutes of the game. And I always felt with better opposition, with that much possession, they would find themselves behind Liverpool if it was a better team they were facing, which they are at Stoke on Saturday, than what Helsinki. So defensively, I was slightly worried.
But that was not, I mean, that's no different to last year, is it? You know, we had some real defensive uncertainty last season. What actually worries me is that what happened towards the end of last season, why did that happen? Why did we have two such shambolic performances? Crystal Palace at home and Stoke away.
Well, formation changed.
Why did that happen?
Formation changed.
Yeah, but he can't. I mean,
see, when you've got three at the back, there's always that added security of an extra body, isn't
there? As Ronnie Moran would say, never mind formations. It's all about players, yeah? So in those two games, we had the same amount of players on the pitch as Crystal Palace and Stoke. We have better players than both of those teams, yeah? And still, we lost 3-1 and 6-1. Why did that happen? That worries me more than anything. Was that just a blip? Or, you know, why does things like that happen?
Just to touch on players coming in. Firmino, we talked about him earlier on. Too early for him to go straight into the team?
Well, of course. I mean, he's returned back to pre-season later than the rest of them. So it is too early. But he's most definitely one of those players that they need to get up to speed very quick, because with the programme I mentioned before, those first seven away games, and you know, you need everybody. And I think Brendan knows that. Settle team. We've got to get a settled team.
Yeah.
We can't afford people to beat us over the head with an unsettled. We've got to have a settled team.
Hence the pre-season straight away.
The way that it was. I mean, I was amazed that Mark Lawrenson came out and said that he feels that due to the opposition in pre-season, Liverpool might be a bit undercooked.
That was my next question, to be honest.
But what is a good pre-season? What do you have to do pre-season, Jason?
Well, you look at last night, Bayern, AC Milan, you know, Real Madrid, Tottenham played. I've had a tough pre-season, you would suggest, but the opposition that they played, did Liverpool need a bit more?
But then Tottenham might go to Old Trafford on Saturday and lose 3-0. So, I mean, I don't know what a good pre-season is. Do you play loads of games? Do you play a few games?
Yeah, but standard of oppositions, you play higher.
But when I was at Ajax, we played 12, 13 pre-season games.
Wow.
And we played two of any quality, which was always the Amsterdam tournament.
Right.
But everything else was 15-0, 18-0. We won 25-0. It was against amateur teams.
Battered them.
Just to get your rhythm and your flow. And then you finish up.
Confidence.
So I don't know what a good pre-season is.
Okay. Well, that leads us into the first game of the season, Stoke. Obviously, we finished with them at the end of last season. It was really, really disappointing. And you touched on it there. A 1-0 victory would suffice this time around. What do they need to do to get that?
Well, first and foremost, you need to be... Brendan Rodgers very much liked to worry about his own team. Yeah, and that's the Liverpool way, isn't it?
Mm.
We just worry about our own team and what we can do, isn't it? But I think you've got to be careful. This is about having the ability to stop what they've got. You know, and ideally it's not the way he wants to do it, anymore, but you have to pay attention to what they've got. What qualities have they got? They haven't had a great pre-season either.
Mm-hmm.
Shawcross is injured, but they've still got good qualities. So he's got to look at the game, the 6-1, and see what do they do? Did they find any weakness in the Liverpool? Got to make sure we stop that. So I think it is much more than a great performance. You're more looking for a dogged performance where you don't get embarrassed. Pinch yourself a draw, maybe even a win. It's a great start to the season, but they've got good quality. I mean, Bojan is back. I don't think he'll start, but he'll certainly be on the bench. They've got some good players, but under normal circumstances, you go into a game even away at Stoke thinking this isn't. Yeah, it's a tough innit, but it's also an away game. You know, you can win, and what a great start that would be. Win your first game of the season away from home
against Stoke, who will take points off a lot of teams later on to the season.
You know, last season. They did their fair bit against the better teams. I mean, they were 3-0 up against Arsenal at half-time. So let's not underestimate them. But Liverpool on a good day should be able to win that match.
Just going away from Liverpool and talking in more broader general terms of the Premier League. Chelsea, you know, great season from them last season. Mourinho obviously disappointed with the result at the weekend. Probably won't look too much into it. To an Arsenal that I felt finished really strong last season and probably will be Chelsea's main title rivals this season. You know, if anyone's going to knock them off the top, I feel it will be Arsenal. Man City obviously have bought, you know, they've heavily invested, but Man United, they've sort of excited me a little bit with the players that they've brought in. Van Gaal seems to have done a really good job in pre-season. What for you excites you about the Premier League, the top teams, players that have come in?
Well, obviously, my hope is that it's going to be tighter. Last year, we never really had a title race, did we?
No, it was always Chelsea's, wasn't it, from early doors, yeah.
After 12 games, Chelsea were 15 points clear of Arsenal. Mm. So that's Arsenal. I mean, over the last 26 Premier League games, Arsenal took more points than Chelsea.
Which they seem to do. I mean, I looked at it. They went out at the same stage last season as the season before, out the Champions League. And I think they lost one in the last 12 games that season before. It was, you know, they seem to go on this ridiculous run after they get knocked out the Champions League. They're very, very strong finishing Arsenal, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And defensively, they've improved. Yeah. I think they've only conceded 13 Premier League goals in 2015, which is an improvement. So I think they will be Chelsea's main. I just worry about Arsenal. You know those games when you have to dig it out from somewhere.
The grinding ones, yeah.
It's not about playing well.
It's not going right for
you. It's not about playing well. It's about finding a way of winning this match. Do they have that? Do Arsenal have that? If they find that, I think they might take the title off.
Do they need something else? Do they need another striker?
Yeah, in an ideal world, they do.
But will they get him?
The rest of the team is so strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've got so many options in mid. I mean, those midfield players, they've got the best selection of midfield players in the Premier League. Ideally, they do want another striker. Whether that will be the case or not, I don't know. But they will be strong. There's no doubt about that.
United.
I mean, you said they're excited. I don't see it. I think they're unbalanced. They're talking about the first game of the season playing centre-half pairing of Daley Blind, who's not a centre-half, not a left-back, not a defensive. I don't know what he is, his utility man. Alongside Phil Jones or Chris Smalling, doesn't fill me with confidence. They've let their strikers go. Rightly so, I think. Falcao was a disappointment. Van Persie's finished. But they haven't replaced him. They bought some good options in midfield. Schweinsteiger, if he can stay fit, is a good player. Schneiderlin is not a problem. Memphis Depay could be anything. He is really, really exciting in it. But I still see an unbalanced squad. And I think
some would suggest that was unbalanced last season. Look at the season they had. Overachieved, probably, with the way that he made different changes, didn't he? And the way he set out in games, how they were winning games.
He hasn't been able to deal with some of the shortcomings that they've got. Why hasn't he bought a centre-half? Why haven't they gone? They've chased players that they were never going to get. They were never going to get Ramos. They were linked with Thomas Müller. They were never going to get Thomas Müller. You know, be linked and try and get...
United's always done that.
Yeah, but United are not the United they were 5 years ago, are they?
No, I know, but is that not good PR?
5 years ago.
Is that not United, good PR?
5, 7, 8 years... But it's not when you don't get them, is it? 5, 7, 8 years ago, Manchester United belonged in the top two or three in Europe. The top three in Europe now are Real Madrid, Barcelona and Bayern Munich. Yeah. Forget about buying players from them. If they want to sell a player, they'll come to you.
Yeah.
They press the button and go, you can now have Schweinsteiger. So forget about chasing players at those clubs, yeah, and go elsewhere and buy the rest, buy the best from the rest.
Finishing near the bottom then, who...
United.
No, teams that have come up. Well, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Teams that have come up and teams that struggled last season. Obviously now you're looking at teams who have entered the West Ham. Probably they've gone into the Europa League, haven't they? They progress in that. Will that hinder the?
When I look at the Premier League now and the whole setup of clubs, I don't see a guaranteed relegator. Last year, for as much as we liked Burnley and Sean Dice, and you just always felt that they were never going to have enough. They were never going to score enough goals. They were always, I mean, they were near the line all the time, but you never felt they were going to have enough. This year, I look, the three promoted teams, one thing they all got, they got highly rated managers, haven't they? If those managers are as good as a lot of people think they are, and they've all bought, okay, Norris hasn't bought a lot, but Bournemouth have bought a lot. Watford have been busy.
Scored a lot of goals as well between them all, didn't they, last season?
So I think it's really, really difficult. You know, I still think that up at Newcastle there's work to be done. Mm. Sunderland have bought, but how well have they bought? They could be in trouble. West Ham is always, I mean, based on last season, it would be wrong to think that they could get involved.
So you're feeling a shock this year? And
Aston Villa, you know, Benteke and Delph, they paid nearly 30 million for players from the French league. And every time they sign a French player, you go, who? Who's he?
Yeah,
you know, so you stick your neck out by signing these players. Tim Sherwood, we know when things are going well, but when things go against him, I don't know. And I'll tell you who's really fragile. Everton. I think Everton are really fragile.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting.
Stone's going to go, do you think?
Well, can I mean, you're looking at 30. It's a bit like Sterling, isn't it? Because all you're buying is potential, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Stones have done nothing in the Premier League. He's shown great potential, but he's done nothing yet. Can Everton afford to say no? Can Everton afford not to go out and buy some more players? There's one or two. I mean, Gareth Barry played the most minutes for Everton last year. Last year, I think he officially was the slowest player that's ever played in the Premier League. What's he going to be like this year? You've got to be careful. You don't rely on players that's not going to deliver for you. Ross Barkley's an interesting player, isn't he? But it's been a long time since
he's got to step up, hasn't he? Now
he's got to step up, hasn't he? Yeah. He has to. You can't keep being this great talent.
He's going to be. Yeah,
So I look and I just think that if they get off to a bit of a dicky start, what does that do to Lukaku? You know, who's made it pretty clear, I want to play in the Champions League. So I think they've got to be careful. There could be a tough season for them.
And just finishing off, the one player or two players that you're really looking forward to seeing this season?
What, as in the Premier League?
Yeah, as the Premier League.
I mean, Memphis Depay, you can't help but... He's one of those players, instantly, you notice. You know, he looks right.
Looks the part.
Yeah, he looks the part. And I'm absolutely amazed that Newcastle was allowed to sign Wijnaldum from PSV Eindhoven. He is a proper player. And I cannot believe that nobody else came in for him. So I'm really looking forward to him.
Brilliant. Okay, last question, and we'll finish on this. Prediction, weekend, Liverpool?
I think a draw is a great point, and I think he'll end in a stalemate, and I think that's a good start.
We'd just like to thank Gusto, who are always great hosts, always... with the coffee and the... well, we're not on them anymore, are we? We're on this caveman diet thing now, aren't we? Everyone's doing that. Well,
the whole squad?
Well, I am. I don't know about you. I don't think you're on. but yeah, I just want to thank all the staff at Gusto for their hospitality. Join us again next week where we'll have another podcast and some new voices. Looking forward to the up-and-coming games that are ahead of for Liverpool, and obviously reflecting on the weekend against Stoke. Thanks very much.
There you go.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.